This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
It's my pleasure to welcome Jeff Ferry. He is chief economist at the Coalition for a Prosperous America. He has written for the Washington Post, Forbes, and Bloomberg News, and produced documentaries on business for the BBC, and he's author of The British Renaissance. Jeff, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on your show.
Where are you located?
I'm based in Alexandria, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C.
Fantastic. The belly of the beast, Washington, D.C. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about trade in the news. Obviously, it's a very, very important thing. Kind of where do you stand? And give us some insights into all this talk. You know, we hear things, mostly it's anti-Trump. I think there's a media bias there, but that doesn't mean the media is wrong either necessarily. What are your thoughts?
I think trade's a very important issue, and I think often the media is wrong, unfortunately. I mean, we, the Coalition for a Prosperous America, we're bipartisan, and we support President Trump's trade policies. We support many Democrats who agree with him, although most of them keep a low profile. But the key issue here for me as an economist is we've had half a century of trade deficits, bad trade policy, industrial decline, and we can turn that around, and we need to turn that around.
So, you know, my listeners hear me say this a lot, and I don't know if it comes down to this, maybe it's a false dichotomy, but, you know, in the very broad scheme, it seems like you can either have really cheap consumer products or you can have jobs. Is that the trade or not?
You know, that's not a bad way to caricature the situation. And our view is you can definitely want to have jobs, not cheap consumer products. Because if you go down that road and, you know, you see plenty of people in the newspapers and on Twitter saying, well, what really matters is consumer prices. But that's probably because they've got a very secure job, maybe in the public sector or somewhere where they know they're not under threat. But if you think about it, if you just focus on getting cheaper and cheaper consumer goods and asking other people to make all the things you want to buy, eventually we run out of jobs in this country and eventually people stop lending us money to buy their goods, and then we're nowhere. This country got strong, you know, between 1776 and 1900, we rose to become the most powerful industrial power in the world, and we did that by producing everything from railroads to steel to textiles to cars, and then, you know, you bring history forward and we produced many other things. The period of decline is when we began asking other nations to produce things and let us buy them because we like the cheap prices.
Yeah, well, I just have to tell you, I couldn't agree with you more. It does look good on the surface. You know, everything has become, well, not everything, certainly college education, healthcare, et cetera, but consumer products are great and they're cheap. I mean, it's really amazing. Like, I just remember what it was like even in the 90s. And, you know, we can just have so much stuff now. But what good is a house full of stuff if you don't have a job? And it's just hollowing out these well-paying middle-class jobs that have just been offshored, offshored, offshored relentlessly. And, you know, when it comes to a national security perspective, too, a country that doesn't manufacture, if you ever have to go to war again, is going to be in serious trouble. You've got to have a manufacturing base, don't you?
Absolutely right. I mean, the U.S. is the most powerful country in the world, and we've been a role model for many other countries. But make no mistake, that's because they look at our vast productive power. I mean, people remember or they read about the Second World War when, you know, we went into the war and we tipped the balance very quickly. And, you know, not because we had the most brilliant generals, we had some great generals, but really because in Detroit and Pittsburgh and places like that, we were able to turn out airplanes, tanks, jeeps, guns, machine guns, at a rate that people in the rest of the world just could not believe. And, you know, those who say, could we do that again today? I doubt it, are absolutely right. I doubt whether we could do that again if we had to.
Well, you don't want your soldiers' boots to be made in China. That good country could end up being your enemy. Who knows?
And I'm not advocating that we need to make everything at home. I mean, I believe in trade. I believe in allies, and I believe in working with them. It's just in our case, it's gone too far. There's been too much deindustrialization. And then a related issue is what you're referring to is you don't want to rely for crucial imports on a country like China, which is at best a rival and at worst an enemy.
So where do we fall on this? I mean, there is a happy medium. You know, trade is good, and I think trade ultimately creates a more peaceful world. People tend to not want to destroy their own customers, right? So that's a good thing. But where do we fall on it? Like, how do we fix it? You know, take us through maybe a little bit of kind of the Trump side of the equation and maybe the opposing viewpoint.
Sure. Okay. So, I mean, there are a number of problems in the trade arena. The most prominent one at the moment, I would say, is China. China has abused the trading system since 2001. They practice gross IP theft, intellectual property theft. They force companies to go into joint ventures inside China. And they're running a huge trade surplus with us, which recently emerged as an all-time high for 2018. It was $419 billion, if I remember the number correctly. Now, that problem has to be fixed. And I think President Trump is doing the right thing in saying, look, for 20 years, they've said, let us have talks. And the talks have ground on. And the Chinese masters at delaying and promising to set up study commissions. And meanwhile, they now dominate industries like steel, chemicals, concrete, aluminum, the list goes on and on. So we need to aggressively say to China, look, we're not going to transfer to you all of our technology for free. We're not going to let you steal it from us through cyber hacking and other illegal means. And we're going to insist that we close up that trade deficit. Now, will President Trump be successful in that negotiation? I couldn't tell you right now. There's a lot of infighting in the White House. So there's people saying he should just settle for whatever is a quick compromise because the farm community is complaining. I certainly hope he hangs on for a tough deal because the Chinese economy is hurting because we have restricted their ability to export to us. But that's just one part of the problem. There's more aspects to the problem than that. I mean, we have to make our economy more competitive against the entire rest of the world. And I would say the most important single thing we could do there would be to reduce the value of the dollar, because the dollar is too high right now. We need a lower exchange value to make all of our goods competitive.
So reduce the value of the dollar intentionally, but won't that cause inflation?
I think there's a misconception about how inflation would be impacted by policies like making the dollar more competitive. We recently ran our economic model of the U.S., managing it to deliver a 27% devaluation of the dollar, which is the amount we think is required to balance trade over 6 years. And what we found was that inflation went up by roughly 1% a year from about, I think the numbers were from 1.75% to 2.75%. And that's a small price to pay because the benefits of the devaluation created what were huge. It was an extra $1 trillion on GDP, up to 6 million additional jobs created, a boom in manufacturing, positive impact on agricultural prices, and wages moving up. So when you consider all those benefits, dealing with 1% more on inflation is a trivial price to pay for such an improvement.
Well, and you didn't even mention employment, what would have happened to employment. But you know what? Can you just drill down on that a little bit for our listeners and for me as well? Because it seems like, look, this is what many have accused, including Trump, have accused China of doing, right? Artificially suppressing the price of their currency so that it makes their exports cheap. So this would bring more export business to America because our exports would look cheaper. But when we have to buy things outside our borders, our currency would be worth 27% less. So wouldn't we just have to pay 27% more for everything made everywhere else, or no?
Yes. So you're asking two separate questions.
I know. One is, it's a big
when is it right
question.
And wrong to devalue in the sort of what are the rules of the road here? And secondly, how does it actually affect our economy? And so the first one is the rules that we have, such as we have, and many countries don't obey these rules, are designed to get countries to value their currencies at a level which keeps their trade roughly balanced. That's been the goal since the Bretton Woods Agreement in 1944, which first set us on this path of a combination of floating and flexible exchange rates. And the idea is, if you're a surplus country, you should let your currency rise, so you tend towards balanced trade. And if you're a deficit country, you should move your currency down, so you also tend towards balanced trade. Now, currency manipulation is specifically holding your currency at a level that is too low so that your surplus is either stays the same or rises. And at various times, countries like China, Japan, Singapore, South Korea, and Taiwan have pursued that practice. Because the U.S. has been in deficit for 43 years, we could never be seen as a currency manipulator. Our problem is that the markets are holding our currency far higher than it ought to be to allow us to get the balanced trade. Mm-hmm. So it's those currency markets that are causing the deindustrialization. Now, the second question you asked me is a slightly different one. Wouldn't foreign goods be more expensive if we devalue the dollar? And this is a variation of your original question of, what's more important, cheap consumer prices or right. jobs? Yeah. And, I think you're right. And if we devalue the dollar, yes, foreign imports do become somewhat more expensive. But the point is, by devaluing the dollar, we give a huge stimulus to our industrial sector, to our manufacturers yes. who manufacture more goods, hire more people, invest in more factories, and we become a more productive country. And for people with jobs, which will be a growing percentage of the population, the fact that foreign imports are somewhat more expensive is less of an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. And I've done this completely oversimplified analysis. I mean, it is insanely oversimplified. But just look at it this way, like kind of common sense. If you have a job or a higher paying job like we used to have in the 80s, I guess I'd say especially, where you've got these good paying American jobs, right? You're hopefully not going to spend every penny you make on expenses. Hopefully you'll save 15% of your money mm-hmm. because you'll have a job that pays enough to allow you to save and you're not going to be a spendthrift, right? Well, if you're paying more for products, even if there really is inflation, even if you're paying 27% more for gadgets made in China, so what? Because you're not hopefully not spending all your money. So you're building wealth, because the keystone of wealth creation is accumulating capital. You've got to have capital formation for a person or a society to create wealth. If you spend it all, you're not going to have any capital formation. So a very important, very basic concept. I mean, Americans, until just recently, under, kind of the auspices of the Trump administration, they haven't had an increase in pay since 1977. I mean, in real dollars, wages have just been flat, except for, a few segments of the market. Obviously, the super high-level CEOs, their wages have increased dramatically. But the mainstream American, their wages have been stagnant in real dollars.
That's absolutely right. The average production worker is earning the same amount he was in the 1970s, which violates the entire history of America and the American dream, and what people believe about America. It's not a tenable situation. You're absolutely right that capital accumulation and saving are key pieces of the puzzle to create a growing economy. And what makes it possible for individuals to save is if they're working for successful companies that can pay them a good wage and bump that wage up 1%, 2%, 3%, or 4% each year. And to do that, you've got to have growth industries. The problem with the trade deficit and with the overvalued dollar is it hollows out our growth industries. So we have fewer and fewer growth industries, and those that we have, like the software industry, are hiring people in the top 5% of the income distribution and nobody else. So we've got a real problem. We've got to broaden the potential of our economy to succeed. And to do that, President Trump is doing some of the right things. Renegotiating trade agreements with China and other countries is an important step. More needs to be done. As I said, we need to address the value of the dollar. We need to focus on rebuilding domestic manufacturing industries too, because manufacturing is the key to getting on that growth cycle that I spoke about. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with a service job, and, you know, we certainly need healthcare workers because, you know, we all want to be healthy, but nothing offers the opportunity to grow and get more productive and therefore pay people more the way that manufacturing does.
You know, it's such an interesting thing, and I know we've got to wrap it up, Jeff, but I have noticed for the past few decades how everybody is just looking to get money from each other. In other words, you know, we can't all be each other's chiropractor and realtor. Someone actually has to make some widgets, and we just can't outsource all the manufacturing of the widgets. If you want good, solid, stable, high-paying, middle-class jobs, and you want to have a thriving middle class, you've got to have a manufacturing base. I wholeheartedly agree, and I think Trump is finally going to bring some of those jobs back. And listen, I'm not loving everything Trump does, okay? I disagree with a lot of stuff he does, but this trade stuff, he's got it right. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. Wrap it up with a closing thought and your website, please.
Sure. We are the Coalition for Prosperous America. We agree with exactly what you said, that manufacturing is key to our economy. Agriculture and the family farm is also key to our economy, and improving our trade balance there will also trigger the sort of positive cumulative effects that you'd see once we rebalance manufacturing. So check us out at prosperousamerica.org. You can read my articles under the research tab. You can see all the activities we're doing. We're constantly talking in Washington to the powers that be in the executive branch and the Congress about measures to improve the U.S. trade balance and the U.S. economy generally.
Excellent. Jeff Ferry, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.